AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone, on your Monday morning. Once again, do not delay. Enter your bracket today. I really like that because it kind of rhymes. The 2023 Bracket Buster Challenge presented by the good folks at Case IH. First prize, $1,000. Second is $500. Third walks away with $250. Go to agweb.com right now. Fill out your bracket. Bracket Buster Challenge brought to you by Case IH. Let me bring in Alan Hoskins now from American Farm Mortgage. Mr. Hoskins, thank you for joining us this morning.
Davis, thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, it we reached out, well, gosh, was it clear last week? I knew that I wanted to talk to you anyway, and then suddenly the golden goose lays an egg here, and out of the sky comes some big news that has some people really disconcerted and a little bit confused about the banking industry in general. Can you comment on what happened at Silicon Valley Bank, just one of a few last week that have had some major problems?
Well, you know, Davis, first of all, obviously I have no intimate knowledge of what occurred or led to what ended up happening. The banking regulators are always looking to ensure the safety of the banking system is supported. You go back to the 80s, we saw a lot of bank closures. You look at the bank closures that occurred both Friday and Sunday. Those were banks that certainly, it would appear, were lending in areas primarily other than agriculture. And, you know, for that reason, obviously, you know, I don't have any intimate knowledge, but certainly I think it is a positive to know that we do have regulators that are ensuring the soundness of the banking system continues to be there. So, you know, I think that's a case where certainly I see where there can be some consternation on the part of individuals, but I think there's also a positive in the respect that the regulators are working to ensure that the viability of the banking system is ongoing.
Now, those regulators, they've announced that the government would ensure the deposits from that particular bank are good. Mm-hmm. Depositors will have access to their money starting today. Banks insured by the FDIC will be required to pay a tax to fund the measure. Yet we have assurances that the American taxpayer won't have to foot the bill on this. Is there risk that if FDIC has to pony up, that trickles down to guys like you and me?
Well, Davis, the banking system, obviously, banks on an ongoing basis pay in funds to the FDIC to ensure that there is a pool of funds available in the event such as this to make sure that insurance coverage levels advertised by the FDIC are supported. So there definitely is the cushion there to cover things, again, as FDIC coverage very clearly states. As far as the trickle down, I will use history as an example. You can go back to the 1980s and look at how even in a period of time where agriculture was going through arguably its most turbulent period in my lifetime, the banking system stayed as a part of rural America. And I would have no reason to believe that we would not see that continue. There can be instances where the assessments paid by financial institutions are increased based upon risk factors that are outstanding. So again, it tends to be more the federal government looks to the banking industry to make sure that pool of funds is consistently solid.
Well, and it can be easy for regular folk to look at a bank as sort of a sacred institution. And I understand that there should be special protections involved there when, you know, I'm basically trusting this institution. I earn my money. I work hard for my pay. I take it there. I expect it to be there when I need it, when I want it. But is there a, do we need to maybe shift that? I mean, if I have a, if I open a restaurant and I run it poorly and I don't do the right things to make a restaurant that's good, that, that people can count on to have good food, the market's going to put me out of business. It's just the way that it goes. You have a crappy restaurant, nobody's going to show up, and it, it doesn't do anything for anyone, so it shuts down. Banks, sometimes, if we've got FDIC, you know, backing them up and the federal government willing to, should we just let banks that don't do business very well shut down?
Well, I think, Davis, if you look at the marketplace as a whole, the banks that don't do business traditionally in the correct way, those do disappear from the market. Granted, it is not typically in the form of an FDIC closure. It's more typically in the form of either assets or the institution being acquired by another banking organization that is better positioned to be able to serve that community. So I think we do see that occur. Obviously, if you look at the number of consolidations in banks over the years, we've seen the number of banks definitely on a downward trend. I would also note that if you look at the two institutions that have been in the news over the past weekend, and I believe I'm correct, I believe one was formed in 1983, one was formed in, I believe, 2001. Those would be considered probably a little more younger banking institutions. If you look at rural America, at least, there tends to be a lot more, I believe, institutions with age that are in the rural areas. So I would tell you that I think the marketplace does provide for banks that aren't serving their communities well to no longer be in business under their particular charter. It's just not typically in the form of a closure by FDIC.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Let's move over to the rural side. Just speak broadly for us. What's the general condition of ag banking from your perspective?
From the perspective that I have in the rural banks of which I'm aware, I believe there's still very much a solid base in rural America banking. We have seen, obviously, farm incomes continue to be strong over the past few years. And I think you have banks that are what I would refer to as predominantly ag banks, tend to do a good job at understanding the individual risks that their customers have, because they tend to be focused a little more on agriculture and perhaps have a little more intimate knowledge about their customers' business than maybe banks that are not ag banks. I'm certainly not saying anything negative toward non-ag banks, but I do believe there tends to be a little truth in that. Sure. And so from my perspective, Davis, and from at least the numbers that I see that are put out by various organizations relative to rural banks, there does tend to be strength in the rural bank economies at this point.
Well, that's good to hear. There was some concern over when farmers sat down to secure their operating loans for the upcoming season that the interest rate number would be an eye-popper. Where are we at there?
Well, it certainly is an eye-popper if you compare it with recent history. And when I say recent history, you go back over the past 10, 12, 15 years, where due to what I would refer to as two black swan events, the first being the economic meltdown in 2008, the second being COVID in 2020, we've had unrealistically, in my opinion, low interest rates in comparison to what we've seen. For example, Prime was formed December 1, 1947. You compare it to that over that period of time. Yes, the rates that we saw during the most recent periods have been abnormally low. So without a doubt, we're seeing, as you said, eye-popping rates just simply because the benchmark that we've seen recently has been so low. People are, I think, for the most part, producers, for the most part, Davis, have kind of been prepared for these numbers because in the rural banking community, I think we've done a good job in preparing them for what rates might be.
It sounds like, well, and I don't know, with the banking problems that we saw last week, we were pretty sure before all this came up that there was going to be a half basis point increase. A lot of people were betting on that anyway. What does the Fed do from here on rates, do you think? Does it change anything?
Davis, that's a great question. I guess my opinion personally would be I hope that we don't see an isolated event or what potentially is an isolated event change policy on a longer term basis. So do I think it's something obviously the Fed looks at? I believe, of course, they do. You look at the size of the institutions that were the subject of the communication over the weekend. They're sizable institutions, so it's worthy of them looking at it. However, I would hope that long-term policy isn't necessarily based totally on what we saw this weekend.
Alan, you're a very soothing conversation we've just had here. What I'm taking away from this is just take it easy, work the plan. Everything's going to be fine. Let's not let, like you said, isolated incidents throw us into a panic. Alan, it's been a great conversation. You've educated me, and I sure appreciate it. Have a great day, Alan.
Thank you, Davis. I always appreciate the opportunity to come on the air and share. It's a privilege.
Alan Hoskins from American Farm Mortgage. Coming up, we've got Jim Wiesmeyer. Gosh, I feel calm. Yeah, that feels really good. Jim Wiesmeyer, we'll see what he's got for us today. AgriTalk, I'm in for Chip Flory. Davis Michelson here. So glad you've joined us. Stick around through this quick break, and we'll have more